Good morning, folks. This is Scott Mitchell with our, well, it was a radio program, and now it's a Facebook Live program till we get the mic situation straightened out. If you're on, welcome everybody. I know my daughter Emma is supposed to be watching from Bowling Green today, so
she's
that's cool.
Right now.
Excellent. Love you, baby.
She says sounds good.
She got a 90% on her physics test.
Woohoo!
I'm so proud of her. Anyway,
she's taking the smart physics.
Yeah, she is. She's in honors. Yeah. So anyway, got with me. If you're on Facebook, recognize Shannon Schaefer probably more than you do me. He's been around a lot longer than I have. As far as the church is concerned, no, I did not.
Oh, okay.
If John Bingham was on here, I'd call him old. If you want to get your Bibles, go to Jonah. We're going to talk through the book of Jonah today. I don't know if we'll get through all of it or not. We're going to try to. So what we're going to do is kind of a survey, and kind of not. We'll get into some things. What I want us doing as we go through this is kind of comparing Jonah with the other characters in the book and how they react to God, who listens to God and who doesn't, and that sort of thing. So I'm going to start with, Shannon, would you just read the first three verses?
Sure. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it, for their evil has come up before me." But Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish away from the presence of the Lord.
It's interesting. The word down comes up three times in these first few verses. If you're going to move away from God, what direction do you go?
Down.
I mean, he's trying to do everything he can. Now, we also know that Tarshish was in the opposite direction of Nineveh. Mm-hmm. So he's doing everything he can to get away from the presence of God.
Yes.
And he makes an interesting statement to the pagans on the ship a little bit later that should have told him he couldn't do that, but that's what he tried to do. So he goes down. We see also in verse 5, we admitted that he goes down and he goes down and he goes down to trying to get further and further away from God.
Yeah.
And that's kind of interesting. We also know that we talked about this before the show, then, and 2 Kings 14 and verse 25, Jonah is mentioned as a prophet of God. And so we know he's prophesied for God before, and he knows who God is, and he knows what's going on. And so that's clear from what we see here, but we also see and we also see the word great. Everything in the book of Jonah is great. And so we'll look at that idea too. I'll read 4-6, and we'll talk about those things. It says, "But the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship threatened to break up. Then the mariners were afraid, and each cried to his God, and they hurled the cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten it for them. But Jonah had gone down into the inner part of the ship and had lain down and was fast asleep. So the captain came to him and said, 'What do you mean, you sleeper? Arise, call on your God. Perhaps the God will give a thought to us that we may not perish.'" So what? These are mariners. These professional boat people. What do they know about this storm?
They know it's terrible. That they know that they don't have the, even with all their experience, the ability to overcome it.
Yeah, this ain't right. I mean, there's something going on. Yeah. So when God hurls something, can you visualize God hurling a great storm? I mean, we think about a hurricane. This could be worse than anything we've ever seen. We don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's bad.
Cat 12.
It's really bad. So how do they react? What do they start doing?
Well, they start getting very spiritual,
yeah,
as people will do a lot of times when things get terrible, things mm-hmm. get tough in life. It brings people to the point of knowing they have no control over it.
Mm-hmm.
And they then turn to, and they describe to their God. There's, in verse 3, starting out even, there's a misunderstanding of God. Verse mm-hmm. 3 talks about Jonah,
yep,
who, whether he understands or not, surely I would think he would, or whether it's just the recording, the record of the thing, but it says Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord, mm-hmm. as if God is stationary or in only mm-hmm. in one location.
Yep.
And but that's the concept a lot of times for people is, well, God's just here, whether it is that God's only here at this time, or the God is just in this particular place. Mm-hmm. And then that's probably the concept of the ship, those that are mariners, thinking that that they cry out to their God.
Yeah.
And their God maybe is over the sea, or their God is over the weather.
And each one cried to his God. So they're each crying out to, so it's probably like an international crew, everybody crying to a different God.
Everybody, yeah.
And getting nothing accomplished, obviously.
That's right.
So it's kind of interesting to think of that. Well, where is God?
Yeah.
Can you get away from him? We'll see that as we go through this. That's good. All right. So what does the captain, well, first of all, what did Jonah do?
He goes down and he's taking a nap.
When we want to get away from stuff, what do we sometimes do?
Well, we just go and get as far away as we can and just simply try to do what we can to
put
it out of our minds.
Yeah, some people might use drugs and alcohol, whatever, and some people just kind of get depressed and sleep.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's what's going on with Jonah here or not, but he's trying. I think in the back of his mind, he knows he can't get away from God.
Sure.
So he's trying his very best just to kind of get away from. And we can be guilty of that same thing. And we just, it's kind of interesting. So what does the captain say to him?
Arise, call out to your God.
So we got one more God to call to. Won't you try him?
Yeah.
It's kind of, and it's interesting who's leading this prophet of God to do the right thing.
Yeah.
A pagan.
Yeah, a pagan who knows nothing about one true God.
But it's interesting by the end of the chapter who they know, which is really cool to see this. All right. Let's go through. Would you read 7 and 8?
And they said to one another, come, let us cast lots that we may know on whose account this evil has come upon us. So they cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. Then they said to him, tell us on whose account this evil has come upon us. What is your occupation? Where do you come from? What is your country? And of what people are you?
Yeah. So what are they trying to find out from Jonah asking him those three questions?
They're trying to find out if he is the one that has brought this upon them because of his God that they describe.
Yeah, they basically ask him three times, where are you from? Where are you from? Where are you from? They want to make sure they're praying to whatever God he's got and get to the bottom of this thing. And they also cast lots. And we don't understand all that. We know from Psalm 16, I think it's 35, that says that God controls the outcome when they cast lots. We know God's got his hand in this.
Yes.
So they ask him three times, you know, first of all, what's your occupation? Where are you from? Where are you from? Where are you from? And Jonah's answer is the right answer. He says in his... As we've seen other people do, I am a Hebrew. Okay, I'm a Hebrew. And I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land. Now, whose sea is he on?
He's on God's sea.
And he's going to get away from God?
Yeah.
So that you see this hypocrisy, really, in his answer. It's the right answer, but he's talking the talk, but he's not walking the walk.
Sure.
And so he says the right thing, but does he really fear God?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't appear that he does.
No.
And so they do. They're like, okay, but he really doesn't.
Yeah.
Said, then the men were exceedingly afraid. This is what this pagan says to him is, he says, what is this that you have done? How can you do something like this against your God?
Mm-hmm.
For the men knew that he was fleeing from the presence of the Lord because he told them. So they know what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they know this storm isn't normal.
Yeah.
There's something weird about this. And so they, hey, dude, what do we do? And they ask him in the next verse, what shall we do to you that the sea may quiet down for us? So they know he's to blame. For whatever they believe this situation, they've seen enough weird stuff. No, this can't be normal.
Right.
And so they ask him a very good question. What does he say? Go ahead and read 12. Just read 12 and 13.
He said to them, pick me up and hurl me into the sea. Then the sea will quiet down for you. For I know it is because of me that this great tempest has come upon you. Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to get back to the dry land, but they could not, for the sea grew more and more tempestuous against them.
Yeah. So he very calmly says, I know, just hurl me in the sea. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
So why does he say this? Does he have concern for their welfare and say, you know, if you throw me in the sea, you'll be safe? You think that's why he's doing this?
Not necessarily. I think probably Jonah has the concept that this is all You know, God's account has done this, and God's in control mm-hmm. of the sea. And so, surely, if I'm the cause of this, if you throw me into the sea, then yeah. that'll take care of it.
It almost is like he'd rather die than turn back to God. Mm-hmm. Just I'll just die.
Yeah.
And we don't know yet, if we haven't studied the book, we don't know yet why he doesn't want to go. Mm-hmm. By the way, we haven't even talked about that. God told him to go to Nineveh.
Yeah.
Where was Nineveh?
The other direction, surely.
And okay, where was Nineveh? What city was it? Where nation was it part of?
Well, it was. I don't know.
These Assyrian people.
Syria.
Tell me about the Assyrians.
Bunch of nice guys.
Yeah.
Were they friendly and nice?
Surely not. They were the enemies of the Israelites. They were enemies of God's
and
people.
They had a reputation being cruel. I mean, they would like on their borders. They would pile skulls up to scare people. And, you know, they would impel people and do really cruel things to people. And Jonah would nothing do to these people. But we don't know that until we don't know why until the end of the book when he explains this situation, mm-hmm. when he confronts God.
Yeah.
But these people, Jonah doesn't want to go.
Yeah.
And he's doing everything he can to not go, including just throw me and let me die. Because he had no concept of what God may do for him. Mm-hmm. Or whether he just let him drown in this situation. So, but the reaction, who are the men concerned about? Now, what do they try to do?
Well, they try to save everybody, including Jonah. They don't seem to take his first advice. It's interesting, too, that in verse 9, when he says, "I'm a Hebrew, I fear the mm-hmm. Lord, the God of heaven," He kind of proclaims to them that there is not a multitude of gods. Mm-hmm. You pray to your God, you pray to your God, and I've got my God, and I'll pray to him. But he does proclaim to them that there's just simply this one God. He's the God of heaven. He made everything, the sea and the dry land. That covers everything. And as a result, it seems that they believe him. They're afraid, and they said, you know, what is it you've done? And so if you're fleeing from this presence of the Lord, when he says that, they say that they really believe what he said.
So, you know, really, even if they got a little closer and they threw Jonah in shallower water, it would be a little better for Jonah. You know, they're hoping that they can help this. Even if they're still there, like, okay, we're going to do everything we can to help this guy. And they're concerned for him. They're concerned for themselves. But if they were just mad at him, they'd have said, fine, throw him in. But they didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, they're trying to help, and they're concerned for him, and he had zero concern for these Assyrian people, zero.
Yeah.
And he shows that over and over again. And so, again, who is outperforming God's prophet?
Well, people that
these
are
pagans.
Totally against
yeah.
God.
They don't even know who he is, and they're being better people than what, or more pleasing to God than what Jonah is. I won't say better people, but certainly more pleasing to God. So they're trying their best, and so what does God do?
So as a result, then they just it gets worse.
Yeah. So God says, nice plan, but no. Mm-hmm. And so they can't even move. So they finally give in. But before they give in, I think they make a statement that is really the foundation of the book that we have to pull away from this, and that what they say in 14 really helps us see where they've come and they're thinking about who God is. Mm-hmm. In this process, it says, therefore they called out to the Lord, O Lord, let us not perish for this man's life, and lay not on us innocent blood. For you, O Lord, have done as it pleased you.
Yeah.
They recognize that it's God doing this, mm-hmm. and that's really cool that they're where they've come from,
right?
And we're not even done seeing where they end up. It's really really cool. So they threw Jonah in. They hurled him in there. So they picked Jonah up and hurled him into the sea. I like that word, hurled. And now instantly what happened?
Well, then it says that the sea ceased from its raging. And it seems like it stopped him.
In verse 16, what do the pagans do?
Well, then the men feared the Lord exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. One of the things I think it's interesting is that here's Jonah, called upon by God to go someplace he doesn't want to go, talk to people he doesn't want to talk to, and the first thing he does is trying to flee from God. He doesn't seek to talk to God about it.
No.
So the people that pray in chapter 1 are these pagans. The people that pray are these men who are mariners, that they don't have a good concept of who one true God is. They all have their different gods that they think about. And verse 16 really, I think, kind of indicates they probably didn't build an altar right there in the middle of that wooden ship and start giving sacrifices. They waited till they got back to land. Then they feared the Lord, and it says exceedingly. Then they would have offered the sacrifices to the Lord and to make vows even. And when someone makes a vow, it's a recognition of certain truths, and it's a promise
and
to
so
God.
Through Jonah's disobedience, he converted this crew.
Yeah.
And so the point is, I think, for me, for all of us there, is that God, we've got to be careful how well we think of ourselves and who we think we're, because God can use us to help his cause regardless of whether we're intending to help his cause or not. So we've got to make sure that just because things are going well, it doesn't mean I'm right with God.
Right.
I mean, this was Jonah should have looked at it and said, wow, these people, they believe God. He didn't.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty cool. But then now we get to the what a lot of people think of as the main character. I think the fish is mentioned in 3 verses in this book. And I've come to realize the fish isn't the main character, and Jonah isn't the main character. Who's the main character in this book?
God.
And so we've got it. Now, this next thing we're going to read is God's event. This is not Jonah's event. It is not the fish's event. This is God's event. Mm-hmm. So the question I asked before the show was, is the fish part of Jonah's punishment? Or is it part of
his salvation?
His salvation. Yeah. It's the first step in fixing things, which is pretty cool. What God and how God uses this. So then the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of fish 3 days and 3 nights. Now, a lot of people will try to tell us that this didn't really happen.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just, you know, it's kind of like they'll say that some people told me that the people really didn't, when coming out of Egypt, didn't really cross the Red Sea on dry land. It was they went across on a low tide.
Yeah.
You know, God didn't really. Right. Well, okay, is God God or not? And we got 7 people, so thank you, everybody.
700.
That'll work. People. So we've got, how do we know that this story, if we believe that Jesus is God, how do we know that this is not just a story that it actually happened? We can go to Matthew 12 to find out. Matthew, is that where you're headed?
Yes. Matthew chapter 12, Jesus believed it was true.
Uh-huh.
And he uses
so Jesus
it for a great illustration.
Who else can believe it if Jesus believed it?
We can't.
There you go. So go ahead and read that, and we'll move on to chapter 2.
Yeah, Matthew chapter 12 and verse 38 says, "Then some of the scribes and Pharisees answered him, saying, 'Teacher, we wish to see a sign from you.' But he answered them, 'An evil and adulterous generation seeks for a sign, but no sign will be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For just as Jonah was 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of a great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth. The men of Nineveh will rise up at the judgment of this with this generation and condemn it, for they repented at the preaching of Jonah, and behold, something greater than Jonah is here."
Yep.
So he illustrates that Jonah was real. It really happened. That he really did spend 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of a great fish, and that was illustrating and was going to point to something, and that the people of men of Nineveh were real people, and that they were going to be people that were going to be able, really, they've been people that repented, and that Jonah had preached, they had repented, and that was something that he believed.
So now that we've used more than our 15 minutes on chapter 1, so now we have to move on. So we get in chapter 2, and this is actually what we have recorded here is Jonah's second prayer.
Yes.
Because he's referring back to the prayer he was making, which is pretty cool. Says, "Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish, saying, 'I called out to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. For you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the flood surrounded me. All of your waves and your billows passed over me." I've seen images like of cameras under water in the ocean. You can see the waves going, and it's kind of like you can see him sinking, and he's looking up and seeing all these things going on around him. Someone, Jeff Farmer says, God can use bad people to accomplish good things, and then we see that all the time. Sure, and that's excellent. You know, right. he uses people to accomplish his will. Now, so he's seeing all this going on. He says, then I said, I am driven away from your sight. Yet shall I look upon your holy temple. The waters closed in over me to take my life. The deep surrounded me. Weeds were wrapped about my head at the roots of the mountains. So he's got like seaweed wrapping around his head and his neck, and he's at the bottom.
Yeah.
And like you said, when do people usually turn to God?
When they're at the bottom of
everything.
When
it's as bad as it can get. I think right now we're looking at somebody, he's getting ready to pass out and die.
Yeah.
He's right at that point. Mm-hmm. And I went down to the land whose bars closed up on me forever. Yet you brought up my life from the pit, O my Lord, when my life was fainting away. I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came to you into your temple. And right there, he admits, I was fainting away, and I remembered the Lord. And that's when he started praying.
Yeah.
And, right. and my prayer came to you into your holy temple. Those who pay regard to vain idols forsake their hope of steadfast love. But I, with a voice of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you what I have vowed I will pay. Salvation belongs to the Lord. I think as we go through this, too, we're going to see Jonah has a hard time figuring out what he wants.
Yeah.
He wants to die, then he doesn't want to die. Well, he wants to die, then he doesn't want, you know, so he's vacillating back and forth on how he wants to react to God and his mercy and grace and all these things. But right now, how does Jonah feel?
Yeah. Well, he feels like he's done, and I think verse 9 is kind of interesting. Yeah. He says two things to God. One is, and he's thankful to God.
Yep.
And in that thankfulness, he essentially promises that if there's any way to get out of this, he's going to sacrifice to him.
Yep.
And that he's going to make this vow, and he's going to pay it.
Yeah. So
he
how does,
promise he'll get out of it, but he says, if I do, I will.
So he's thankful that God's saving him.
Yeah.
Right?
He is.
So it's interesting that when it's to his benefit, it's all good.
Yeah.
I mean, what makes Jonah any different when he says, yeah, I fear God, but not what made him any different than the Assyrians or these pagans on this ship?
At that point, nothing made him any different.
So God, this process that God's taken him through,
sure,
is, you know, when we think about our lives and what we go through and how we end up where we are, you know, God had to take him through some things to help him see what he was doing. He's still not done with him.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the lessons maybe for us in general is when we are going through the most terrible times in life, and when people do that, and even when we do that, probably the first thing we don't do is think, I need to thank God right now for being God and for all the good things he's provided for me and all the blessing he's been to me. And probably at that time when things are the worst, probably is the best time to thank God for being God and for giving us so many good things.
Yep.
To thank him, unfortunately, too many times the time when it gets the worst is the time when people turn and blame God rather than thank God.
And so, yeah, and that's it, and that's what, you know, we got to go back to verse 14 of chapter 1. What does God do here? The Lord, Lord, you have done as it pleased you.
Yeah.
God's done what he needed to do. And then what happens next is even pretty interesting. Now, when we get into chapter 3, people argue, well, how could Jonah have gone into that city and had all those people converted in that one instance like that? Well, let's think about I've seen Jaws in these movies. You know, you can see when the big fish come. You can see a big wave coming when something's coming to shore. Imagine being a fisherman and seeing what happens next. All right,
yeah.
You're out there and you're minding your own business, right? You're fishing and you see this big wave coming and what's going on? And God told the fish to vomit. Not hurl, vomit Jonah out, okay? So Jonah's been in this fish for 3 days. This big fish, I don't know, slides up on the beach, block, spits out a man, slides back out in the water and takes off. And this man just gets up and goes, I guess he cleans the slime off and, you know, whatever, and takes off walking. How would you react?
Yeah.
I think I'd be a little scared, maybe a little freaked out. This is weird. This ain't right, you know. I don't know that there's – I was listening to Gary Fisher on this, and, you know, I don't know that there's ever been an occasion – you know, you see these things where these animals eat people, and, you know, they cut them out, and they're still there, but no one's ever survived.
Mm-hmm.
You
That's
know,
right.
This is a fish swallowed a man whole and spit him back out, mm-hmm. and he survived. Mm-hmm. So that would shock me if I was a Ninevite.
Sure.
Or an Assyrian or an Egyptian, whoever I was, seeing something like this probably had a pretty big impact on them. So when we get into the next, we got to keep that in mind, because they would have gone back and said, "You won't believe what I just saw. I don't know what happened. It was weird, but this dude, you know, I'm trying to tell that no one, it would be completely crazy." And so the reaction of the people makes sense when you think about that. So what does Jonah do next? We got to get into. Hey, we didn't use 15 minutes on chapter
All right.
2. We're on
That's
time.
Great.
All right. Won't you go ahead and read, just read 1, well, read 1 through 4, because 5 through 9 is really the reaction of the people. We need to read 1 through 4.
All right. "Then the word of the Lord came to Jonah the second time, saying, 'Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it in the message that I tell you.' So Jonah arose and went to Nineveh, according to the word of the Lord. Now Nineveh was an exceedingly great city, 3 days' journey in breadth. Jonah began to go into the city, going a day's journey, and he called out, 'Yet 40 days, and Nineveh shall be overthrown.'"
All right. So, you know, I've heard some people talk about some really good speakers, you know, strong messages, and really good, you know, orators, and, you know, all that sort of. What does Jonah say?
He's only got one line message.
He's a one-liner. What did he say?
"Yep, 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown."
All right, 40 days, it's over. And that's all he says. And then we read 5 through 9, we're thinking, how did this happen? Mm-hmm. But we got to go back and understand everything that has happened previous to this, and what they've seen, what they've heard about, and what they understand. So 5 through 9 is the reaction of the people. And it's interesting who all they commit to worshiping and fixing this, and what all they commit when we look at this situation. So I'll read 5 through 9. I don't want to overdo your voice. You've got to preach tomorrow. So it says, "And the people of Nineveh believed God." Okay. Jonah said he believed God. Let's compare how they act since they believe God. All right. Mm-hmm. "They called for a fast and put on sackcloth, from the greatest of them to the least of them. The word reached the king of Nineveh, and he arose from his throne, removed his robe, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat in ashes. And he issued a proclamation and published through Nineveh, 'By the decree of the king and his nobles, let neither man nor beast, herd nor flock, taste anything, let them not feed or drink water. But let man and beast be covered with sackcloth, and let them call out mightily to God. Let everyone turn to it from his evil way and from the violence that is in his hands.'" And there was some violence with the Assyrians. "Who knows? God may turn and relent and turn from his fierce anger, so that we may not perish." So who all's fasting?
Everyone.
And
from the king, including even the animals.
Everything. They cover everything with ashes, and they're completely remorseful for what they've done, even the possums.
Martin heard every animal, and he got nervous.
That's okay.
So you don't have to wear sackcloth too, Mr. Martin.
Now,
just so you know.
Okay. So they do all this, and it's pretty. This repentance, it looks pretty impressive. Who else sees it?
Everyone sees it, surely.
And who, verse 10, who saw it?
God saw it.
Okay. And so God also sees this, and what does he do? Yeah. Go ahead and read that.
"When God saw what they did, how they turned from their evil way, God relented of the disaster that he said he would do to them, and he did not do it."
Oh, now we're getting ready to find out why Jonah didn't want to go.
Yes, that's right.
So, what is this? Were these, let me ask this, who were these people Israelites?
No, they were everything but.
Okay, so we've got people, God, is God concerned about these people?
He is. He's
concerned. And he sends his prophet to them, and we've got a prophet saying, "I believe in God. I am a Hebrew. I believe in God." But he didn't.
Yeah.
And these people who are these animalistic, cruel awful people, for a while, repent and turn to God. Now, they're still destroyed. We know in history that that happens to them as a nation. God does bring their punishment. That's really cool about studying Isaiah. We just studied Isaiah 13 and 14 last Wednesday, and it's, those prophecies against the nations are really cool. But we know these people turned to God for a while because of this message. They heard this one message. Hey, in 40 days, God's going to destroy this place. Mm-hmm. And it scared them. And all these things that have happened for Jonah and all these things, he was thankful when God saved him. He was very pleased with God for saving him.
Yeah.
But let's find out what happened. Now, before we leave, what do you have from chapter 3 that you want to bring out? Because I've got some notes, but I've been talking a lot, so I'll let you have.
Well, I was just going to drop down through chapter 1. Jonah claims, "I fear the Lord, the God of heaven." So there's one God. I fear him. In chapter 1 there, those in mariners feared the Lord in verse 16 exceedingly. And they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. So it's one thing to say, I fear God. It's another thing then to be willing to sacrifice to him and dedicate and give yourself to him. Jonah learns to fear the Lord. Surely is taught again to fear the Lord in verse chapter 2.
Yep.
And then when he preaches in Nineveh, people who have not feared God surely have come to the point that they do fear God, they believe God, and they put on the fast in verse 5, and when they do that, it causes the entirety of the city to do so, because when they, and it seems, and it is real. It seems to be, it is not just something that is said, it's not just something that's done because of the dire need of a moment, but it's something that is real, because verse 10, when God saw what they did, so if you say you fear God, it has to relate to life, it has to be lived out. They turn from their evil way. So when we fear God, we stop living a certain way. Mm-hmm. God relented to the disaster he said he would not do to them, and he did not do it. You know, it's kind of like Paul in Ephesians chapter 4 talks about putting off the old man and putting on the new man.
Yep.
There's things we stop doing, and there's things that we start doing in place of that.
Yep.
And so it's one thing to say we fear God, but it has to be lived out.
And so we've been studying 1 John on Wednesday nights.
Yeah.
And we stopped in chapter 3. We got through the chapter, but next Wednesday night we're going to talk about verses 23 and 24 and what belief really means. Because it says, and this is his commandment, that we believe in the name of his son Jesus Christ and love one another just as he commanded us. Whoever keeps his commandments abides in God, and God in him. We've got nine people this morning. That's exciting. 900 people.
900,000.
We're going to talk about what we saw in these people, these pagans, is what belief looks like. And I've talked about love being an action word, faith being an action word, belief is an action word too. And those people acted on what they heard. And they knew the miracle. Like they go back to verse 17, they knew the miracle. They knew what now. Can we say that a fish swallowing Jonah and it being in his belly for, in its belly for 3 days and him being spit out alive, is that a miracle?
I would imagine.
I'm going to say yes. Because there is no way to explain that any scientific way or any, that has to be a miracle. They knew that. I don't know if he came out, you know, with this, there's acids in the, I don't know if his skin was patchy different colors from the acid and the, you know, digestive juices and the, I don't know what he must have looked like, but this was a sight to see.
Well, and if it was the salvation of God, God made it possible for him to be swallowed and then to be still alive and alive after 3 days.
That's cool.
And when Jesus makes his statement of what he believes, it is going to be miraculous account of him going into the grave and coming out alive.
Yep.
It's going to, it's his the salvation of Jonah, and it's the salvation that,
and certainly a foreshadowing of Jesus. I mean, certainly, absolutely is. So we got to go back and read Joel 2, chapter 2, verses 12 and through 14, to see what God had already said about relenting from disaster. So and you go to Jonah 3 and verse 10, you got to write down right there Joel 2:12-14, because it says, yet even now declares the Lord, return to me with all your heart, with fasting, with weeping, and with mourning. Did they do that?
Yeah.
And rend your hearts, not your garments. Did they do that?
Yes.
They're like, God, we return to the Lord your God, for he is gracious and merciful, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love, and he relents over disaster. That is exact. Now, they didn't know that. Jonah probably knew about this verse. These are pagans. Hmm. And they did exactly what happened. It's exactly what God said would happen if you do the right thing. We're no different than they are.
Yeah.
We're no different. We've got to come to God on His terms and do what He asks us to do, and He'll take us. No, we cannot mess our lives up enough to where God doesn't want us back. But we got to do it His way, which is really, really cool. All right, I'm already up in 1 John. I got to go back to Jonah. All right. So that's excellent, and just really, really interesting. So now, anything else? Let's see. So, you know, obviously this was sincere. God knew their heart. I'm looking at my notes. So now we get in chapter 4, and now we finally find out why Jonah didn't want to go. We finally get to the bottom of this, if you haven't read it, and I'm sure most of you have. Would you go ahead and read 1-3 of chapter 4, 1 and 2 of chapter 4.
But it displeased Jonah exceedingly, and he was angry. And he prayed to the Lord and said, O Lord, is not this what I said when I was yet in my country? That is why I made haste to flee to Tarshish, for I knew that you are a gracious God and merciful, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and relenting from disaster.
Now he just quoted Joel 2 there in a roundabout way. So he knew that God was gracious and he didn't want God to be gracious.
Yeah.
Who are we supposed to... someone named Tina just wrote in that Jonah believed and did not obey. Belief alone is not enough.
Rumor is that she's strikingly beautiful.
Oh, she is. Trust me. Now, I'm married up, folks. I'm married up. Now.
And very intelligent.
That's why Emma got a 90 on her physics. That that's right. Has nothing to do with me.
She got mom's brain, right?
So we have Jonah. Now, remember, who's praying here now?
Jonah.
This is Jonah's prayer to God.
Yeah.
He's unhappy with God for being who God is.
Yeah.
So who is it that we should feel so bad about that we would wish that they go to hell?
No one.
And that's really what got Jonah wondering for these people. Mm-hmm. He didn't want God to help them. It made him angry that God did help them. And God asks him twice. When God asked Jonah a question two times in verse 4 and also in verse 9. He says, and the Lord said, do you do well to be angry?
Yeah.
Now, we can go back to Genesis 3 where God approaches Cain. God didn't approach Cain in an angry, so he asked him some questions. He gave him instructions to try to help him. God doesn't approach Jonah here angry. He says, he appeals to him, do you do well to be angry? Think about what you're doing here. Mm-hmm. He tries to get him to understand, and Jonah pouted. Jonah pouted here. And so Jonah went out of the city and set to the east of the city and made a booth for himself there. He sat under the shade till he should see what would become of the city. So Jonah went out and pouted about this situation. Should we ever be upset that someone comes to God?
Surely not.
But he
God
is.
Forbid.
God forbid. Hey, that's a good quote there too. So so now we see some more things that obey God. We've seen pagans obey God. We've seen fish obey God. We've seen wind obey God. We've seen all kinds of things obeying God here. The next thing that obeys God is a plant. Now the Lord God commanded a plant and made it come up over Jonah that it might be a shade over his head and save him from his discomfort. So Jonah was exceedingly glad because of the plant. Is Jonah happy again?
He's happy again.
It seems like when things are going his way, it's all good.
Mm-hmm.
So he's exceedingly glad because of this plant. But now we see something else that obeyed God. But when dawn came upon the next day, God appointed a worm that attacked the plant, so it withered. What happens when the sun rose and God appointed a scorching east wind? The wind obeys God.
Mm-hmm.
And the sun beat down on the head of Jonah, so he sat and was faint, and he asked that he might die. He's wanting to die again.
Yeah.
It is better for me to die than to live. He's gone through some ebbs and flows here. I don't know how long this has all taken, but he's gone through some. He can't figure out what he wants. He wants to live, he wants to die. He wants to be thankful, wants to be mad. He's going through all this because he hates these people so much that he does not want them to know God. Mm-hmm. And it's bitter. It's eating him alive from that standpoint. Anything you want to add on that?
Well, just like you said, it's one of those things. Jonah wanted to die in chapter 1. Just pick me up in the sea, hurl me into the sea, and I'll die, and I'll take care of this problem. He thinks he's going to die in chapter 2, and so then he's ready to tell God thanks, and, if I get out of this, I'll serve you. Mm-hmm. I would think that, although it doesn't say so, in chapter 3, I would think in some way he may think that I'll never survive this, these evil people, these wicked people. He doesn't say he's going to die. Chapter 4 and verse 3, he says, "Therefore now, O Lord, please take my life from mm-hmm. me, for it is better for me to die than to live." I'd rather die than tell these people or help these people do what's right. Yeah. And so now he's saying it once again. He came the next day that he was ready to die. He said in verse 8, he was fainting and he asked that he might die. And it is better for me to die than to live. So maybe he's so distraught now and realizes how bad he's been, what his attitude has been towards these people and towards mm-hmm. with his relationship with God.
But, in verse 9, God says, but God said to Jonah, do you do well to be angry for a plant? And Jonah says, yeah, I do. He says, it's strange. Yes, I do well to be angry enough to die. He is upset. Mm-hmm. And can you imagine talking to God like that? He just puts it right out there. And so, and this is all about the very thing Jonah didn't want. It's about the Ninevites receiving salvation. And God's basically saying, look, he said, look, you care more about that plant than you do these people.
Yeah.
He's trying to make him think. And he goes on and said, and the Lord said, you pity the plant for which you did not labor, nor did you make it grow, which came into being in a night and perished in a night. And should I not pity Nineveh, that great city in which there are more than 120,000 persons who do not know their right hand from their left? And he even appeals to, and what about the cattle? God's thoughts are higher than our thoughts. Jonah sounds like a drama queen. Jeff Farmer, if you're going to participate this much in the show, you're coming on.
That's right, Jeff.
So,
that's right. He needs to.
See,
he's
God,
a preacher.
God even says, would you at least think about the cattle? What are you doing? Yeah. Now, do we know how this turns out for Jonah?
We don't.
We don't know what Jonah does with this.
Probably palace.
Now, we've got about.
He gets his own YouTube channel.
We've gotten through. Well, we've gotten through the book, but we're not through with any of the major things here. God's appeal to him is think about the people. Think about the people. So here's the question that we've got to think about if we're going to be. Do we sleep while other people are perishing? And we do. I mean, think about what are we as Christians really doing to save the world?
Yeah.
According to 2 Timothy 2:9 people. Thank you, folks. nine prayers. Anyway, according to 2 Timothy 2:2, God says, "You teach people, so they can teach people, so they can teach people, so they can teach people." What are we doing?
Yeah.
I mean, are we in a situation where, and you think about checking boxes. Do we go to church on Sunday morning, sip our little grape juice, go home, and check that box, and we're done for the week? Is that our service to God? And if it is, we might as well just hang it up, because it's pointless. So I'm gonna find a verse. You take what I said and make up some stuff so I can find a verse here real quick.
I don't know if I can make up stuff.
No, I'm just kidding.
Necessarily.
There's lots to be said about this that we need to talk about.
Surely the couple of things I think of. One is that, God's work, it has to be done and is going to get done one mm-hmm. way or another. God will make sure his work is done.
Yep. And along that line, he's going to make sure if somebody wants to know him, they will know him.
They will.
And I know I interrupt you, but Dan Langford's doing a sermon at Galena for our gospel meeting next week. It's called Here Am I, Send Someone Else.
Send someone
else. So go ahead.
Yeah. Well, and that's what Jonah wants. Mm-hmm. He wants somebody else to go. He'd rather not go. And the silent, or those that will be silent about God's will to others, they hate their neighbors. Mm-hmm. Jonah hates his neighbors. He hates the Ninevites, and he's not willing to tell them. And one other thing I see throughout this book is, I guess, two ways to put actually the same concept. And that is, no one is so good that they don't need God.
Mm-mm.
And no one is so bad they don't need God. Jonah was, just because he was a Hebrew, he feared or claims to fear the Lord God. It wasn't that he didn't need God and didn't need to do his will.
Mm-hmm.
The Ninevites, as bad as they were, and as lack of knowledge of God that they had, they still needed God. They needed to learn and to know of him, and to know him and needed to do his will. And so mm-hmm. no one's life is so terrible that God doesn't love them.
Yep.
I guess that's another way to put this. Yep. No one's so good they don't need God, and there's no one so good that God doesn't love them,
mm-hmm.
That they can do it all by themselves.
Yep.
And no one is so bad that God doesn't love them and care for them and want them to serve him.
Yep. You know, there's Howard Allen's been coming down from French Tech on Wednesday nights and studying with us. He and Lauren Galloway come down. They've been studying the Bible together for 50 years. They've been at it a long time. And he talks about our religious faith and practice, you know, what we're doing, our religious faith and practice. In Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 1, it talks about fools. It's real. I found this verse. I'm going to do a lesson Sunday about false teaching. And I ran across this by accident. My arm just kind of stuck to a page and it turned open to this. It's not a miracle or anything. It just happenstance. Please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. But it says, guard your steps when you go to the house of God. To draw near to listen is better than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know what they are doing. Mm-hmm. And if we go to God with this, well, I'm doing my part, I'm done, we're fools. We can't do that. Now, like we said, God wants everyone everywhere to come to repentance. He's going to use somebody, good or bad, to bring these people to know who he is. So why not us?
Yeah.
Why not use his people? Why don't we provide him with enough tools to reach all the people he needs? So he doesn't have to. There was somebody that I, you know, there are people that collect ideas about how people are find God. Somebody was on a subway train in New York City and ran across a church bulletin kind of handout thing from 1972 recently.
Whoa.
Nobody knows how it got there. Nobody knows who placed it, when they placed it, but they picked that pamphlet up, whatever it was, 1970 something, picked that pamphlet up and read it, found a church from what that thing said, and were converted to God from who knows who left it there.
Right.
And so God is going to use what God is going to use.
Yeah.
Why not us?
You never know.
Why not us? And so, second question. The first one was, do we sleep when others are perishing? The other thing is, do we recite the creed and not live by it? Like Jonah did. Do we say, I believe in Jesus,
mm-hmm.
and then act like pagans?
Yeah.
Do we believe in Jesus and maybe not act like pagans, but do nothing with it?
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got to be aware of these things. Are we new Jonas? Is that who we are?
Yeah.
And so I'm appealing to people to consider the lives and what they're doing, how they're doing it, and what are your priorities? My son went out to the garage the other night to find something. And it had nothing, I don't know what he was looking for, but he found this work. But he said, Dad, you may be able to use this. He brought it up, and it's a workbook. It's called, what did I say the name of that was? Giving God Control is the name of that workbook. Giving God Control, because it talks about making God your priority and doing those sort of things. We need to think about who's really in control.
Yeah.
And Jonah was doing what Jonah wanted to do, because that's what Jonah wanted to do. Even though God had told him what to do, he was doing what he wanted to do. And we can be guilty of that. We can do what we want to do because we want to do it the way we want to do it, regardless of what God's word says. And we can be just as guilty, and many times have been just as guilty of that. Because, you know, what Jonah did really was rise to the level of a pagan. That's all Jonah did, was rise to the level of a pagan. That should never be.
And because he only, when things were the worst, is when he'd mm-hmm. come back in contact with God yeah. and determined that he would serve God. Yeah. But then when it came to the time to do God's will, go to the Ninevites and tell them the very word that came to Jonah directly from God, then he just goes right back into, mm-hmm. he acts like, you know, I noticed something recently, someone put on a post on a social media site, and they said, you know what, these adults act like a bunch of junior high kids. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't help but think that Jonah acts like a little kid. Because the way he acts and how he responds, mm-hmm. because he was expecting that maybe he could go sit outside the city and, you know, whatever it was, fire falls from heaven, destroys all the people. Yeah. And Jonah goes, yeah, all
Fourth
right, I knew y'all were going to get it.
4th of July.
Yahoo, fireworks.
And I'm glad God let you have it. Mm-hmm. We find an occasion even with the disciples of Christ that they said on one occasion, should we call for fire to fall on these people and yep. to destroy them? And Jesus chides them for that because that's not his desire. His mm-hmm. desire is for them to be saved, for them to do what's right. And so we should never, if we claim that I fear the Lord God, we should never be people who are hoping that and expecting that these people who are just such terrible people, why would, mm-hmm. you know, they're living such terrible lives that we hope that they get theirs.
No, and I guess the question is, does everyone have value?
Everyone has value.
And we have to look at everybody that way. Everybody has value, and Jonah did not value these Ninevites. He did not value their, see, when we look at people and we say, well, they wouldn't believe, they won't want to know anyway, so why try? We're admitting that that it looks like they're going to hell, and we're just going to let them go.
Yeah.
There's an eternal soul in each one of us,
right.
And we need to look at people that way.
Sure.
I don't care who they are, how many tattoos they have, how many gauges they have in their ears, how greasy their hair is, what their car looks like, where they live. We have to value every soul, and Jonah did not.
Yeah.
He just flat out did not. And so, you know, there are two books that end with a question. Nahum is one of them, and this is the other one. And if you want to know about the Nineveh, the Assyrians, go read the book of Nahum, because it talks mm-hmm. about that. But these two books end with a question. And God, you know, when God says, what about the people? And what even the cattle? I mean, would you please realize what you're doing?
Yeah.
And so, everybody has value. We have value. We have value. And why do we have value? Why are we worth anything?
We have an eternal soul. We are made in the image of God.
And so,
and when verse 11, even when he says there are 120,000 mm-hmm. persons who do not know their right hand from their left, mm-hmm. they are young enough, they're babies, they're children who don't even know yet what right and left is. Mm-hmm. And they have value.
Mm-hmm. And so, we're around people every day like that. And they really don't know their right hand from the left. They don't know what direction to go. They don't know what's up and down. They don't know what to do. But they're asking questions. Why am I here? What am I supposed to be doing with my life? You know, where am I going? What's the point of life? We have all those answers. And we have to consider that. It's, you know, but anyway, it's just really important that we understand what we're doing. You know, 1 Peter 2 tells us to honor all men. You know, we have to honor all. We don't have to have a lot in common with somebody to talk to. That Christianity brings us into commonality. Thayer and I have talked about this a lot. You know, we don't have a lot personally. No, things that we like outside of maybe
chicken.
The Chicken Run movie and chickens, literally.
Chickens, yeah.
We don't have a whole lot
chickens.
That we have in common. You know, he's an engineer and I'm not. I'm a teacher. And you know,
can you teach science?
His the way he thinks is different than the way I think. But we've got a common thread.
That goes without saying.
Yeah, of course. We've got a common thread through Jesus that draws us, and we're really, really close friends because of that. Mm-hmm. And so that's how we make the commonality with people.
Mm-hmm.
And we find people with like mindedness and the same hearts, but we can't do that if we look at people and say, they're not worth my time. And we've got to be careful. We need to remember what Jonah was a prophet of God.
Mm-hmm.
that did this. This, we're not talking about a pagan. We're talking about God's prophet that did this.
Yeah.
And hopefully he changed. Hopefully his heart changed. Hopefully he got it right. But we don't know.
Right.
And so there's certainly some lessons there for us. And so anything else? We've got about 5 minutes left.
Theron, yeah, as much Theron, or as little time as you want.
Theron, you have you have your Bible open. You want to read something?
I do. Well, I might. I mean, and to the point, I mean, we didn't have to do the FCC because, you know why. So we can really go, hey, a CD holds an hour and 20 minutes. And I'm not pushing it, but literally we can go over all we want to. We're really not tied to the time.
Because we're not on the radio.
Because we're on the radio. So I was just actually preparing something in case you guys needed some fill-in. So, but a trivia question, if you want to go there. Is the book of Jonah the only place where Jonah is mentioned in the Bible?
No. We mentioned that he's in 2 Kings 14:25.
Good job.
As he's mentioned there as a prophet of God.
And he is. Yeah. Right. So he's not, of course, you don't look at Jonah as the hero of the book of Jonah.
No.
But he is acknowledged elsewhere as a prophet of God. Mm-hmm. So presumably he did something right.
Yep.
So.
At some point,
right.
Yeah. And, you know, he obviously knows who God is, but like Tina said, that's not enough. Mm-hmm. Being in a, can we as saved people be saved with an attitude like this? And we consider ourselves, you know, we've been immersed, you know, Romans chapter 6 talks about being raised in newness of life. We've obeyed that, you know, we've done the gospel plan of salvation, as we call it. Mm-hmm. Does that make us saved? Does that keep us saved?
Well, just believing doesn't. It's essential to get there.
It gets us started.
Right,
I mean, Jonah started.
Absolutely.
But he, from what I've seen, he didn't finish very well.
Oh, no.
And so, but hopefully he did, hopefully through the questions God gave him. But God's asking those same things. Those questions are laid down here for us. I mean, are we considering those people? It used to really bother me that I'd be in a mall trying to hand somebody a card and invite them to study, and got all these people going by that I can't get to. We got this flood of people. I'm talking to one, there's thousands going by or hundreds going by.
Yeah.
How do I get to them? Yeah. Well, that idea that God doesn't want anyone to perish, if somebody wants to know, God's going to make sure they know. I don't have any doubts. I'm completely sure of that. If they want to be saved, God's, whether he uses me or some idiot who out there who's not living any way like, God can use whoever he wants to use to bring people to himself.
Yeah.
But we've got to be out there doing what we can. And Tim Maudlin talks about, you know, doing what we can now.
Yes.
That's what this is about, and our attitude, doing what we can right now for whoever we can do it for. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need to be about doing. And so this book is really cool to point those things out to us and help us. You know, we told the Old Testament's there for a tutor. You know, it's to bring us to Christ and to see who God is. And what he expects. Has God changed in the last, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 years?
No, good question.
You know, is the Bible obsolete, is what I'm saying. Have we as a society moved so far, and we've become so advanced that God's not relevant anymore?
Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to talk about that tomorrow.
Oh, you are? So are you going to answer the question?
Well, to some extent, the Bible certainly answers that. We are, just a little plug here, we are doing a song service tomorrow night.
Okay.
At Eastland.
Okay.
And I will be doing a short talk during that, in which I'll be talking about the greatness of God, specifically talking about him as creator.
Yep.
And so we'll talk a little bit about that. Well, you know, how do we measure up against God? Now, Job, as righteous as he was, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who's more righteous than Job? Well, as righteous as he was, he kind of got this idea that, well, maybe I got some questions, God, and maybe you should answer that. How did that turn out for him, Scott?
God asked him some questions.
And you know the answer to at least one of them, right?
Yes.
That's a story worth retelling sometimes.
No, we don't want to go there.
Yeah, you do.
But so we did. I just want us as Christians and non-believers, I mean, if there's somebody out there who has questions, well, how do I find out? I mean, we can help.
Yeah.
You know, my phone number is 812-620-4034. It's laying here on the table ready to go.
Yeah, for once you can actually call it, because we're not using it for the video. So,
Theron thinks different than most. That's Jeff again. Now Jeff has
Jeff,
to come
okay,
on.
Jeff, you're on. Buddy, Jeff.
Next week.
Yeah, next week, anyway. Jeff. No, next week we might be on.
Well, he'd be all right.
Jeff
he
does need to be on, though.
So,
yeah, one of the things it makes me think of Jonah and what the discussion has been about people who, whether we think they're worth the time to tell.
Yeah.
Acts chapter 17, Paul comes to, the Athenians there and to Athens, and this is an idolatrous city. They know nothing really of who God is, the one true God, and it would be easy to walk through that city and to see all the idols and say, tis, tis, tis. God, just, oh, how terrible it is for all these idolatrous people. And you know what? They would never listen. But that's not what Paul does.
Poor lost souls.
Yeah, poor lost souls, and keep walking.
Too bad.
Jonah wanted to walk through this city and keep walking and go sit down on the outside, on the hillside, and see them get what was coming to them from God. Paul stops and begins to teach and to talk to people who are willing to talk to him. And by the time it's done, he preaches to a multitude of people, and he gets three responses. There were some that said, we'll hear you some more on this. We want to hear some more about who you're talking about. Some believed, and others said, this is ridiculous. We don't believe that because it doesn't fit with what we already believe. We should expect those same responses from people. Some need some more information. They want to understand a little better. They need to hear some more about who it is we're talking about, this one God.
Should we be afraid? Or should it upset us that God's word repels people? Should that hinder us?
No.
It's going to do one of two things. It's either going to attract them or it's going to repel them. It's designed to do that. And so with the fear, we need to get over the fear. We can't mess it up enough to cause somebody to lose their soul. We can't. God's not going to let that happen if they really want to know. I can't say anything wrong enough to cause somebody to go to hell if they really want to go to heaven.
Can't be more deader, right?
No. And, I can't. Yeah, I can't kill them more. I mean, if their souls are, I can't re-kill them. And so we just got to keep trying. And so anyway, I don't want to go on this. We've talked enough, and I appreciate people that have been on here. But just really a great lesson for us to look at and understand. This was a man of God.
Oh, yeah.
This was a man of God that slipped up.
Right.
That hopefully got his feet back under him because of what he saw and what he heard, what he experienced. And he experienced some cool stuff. Looking back on it, for me, it's pretty cool. But him, it's probably pretty freaky. But
pretty crazy.
We're just people. And Jonah was just a person. So we can't beat him up that much because I've denied God. I mean, I've not talked to people I should have talked to. I've not done things I should have been doing.
Right.
I'm still trying to get there, so
appreciate Christ everybody. Christ is your standard. Yeah. Where do you fall on that metrics, right? Let me think. What was the analogy? Death Valley versus Everest, which is closer to the moon.
Mm-hmm. It really didn't make much difference, did it?
Yeah, doesn't make much difference.
So anyway, appreciate everybody being, if you were on this morning, appreciate everybody being on. And sorry about the radio station, but can't do anything about that.
Nothing we can do about that.
I'll have to call Sean.
Have to get hold of Sean. Yeah.
And see what happened.
The video, that we had good feedback from the folks that the audio is actually pretty good. We weren't able to switch mics, but it was better, so that's good.
Yep.
So they were able to, some folks were able to listen.
Yep.
For folks that are tune in to the feed that's not flipped, we're actually using a webcam here in the station. And the benefit of that, there's a few benefits, but one of the big benefits is we can better interact with the folks.
Yeah.
So if that feed works for you, that's great. Or if you want to, if you can bring up both feeds and type in one and listen to the other if the audio is better, if that can work, that's fine too.
Yeah.
It's with little difficult for us to respond on the tablet.
Which is how Matt was able to write down Jeffrey's little...
Yes, thing. Jeffrey got on. He was usually on this feed, but he managed to get on the one
he
got to type in, yeah.
Thank you, Jeff. So. But anyway, love everybody. Thank you.
And Jeff has got to come on.
And here we got to end the right way, right? This is Scott Mitchell begging you to just let the Bible speak.
That's it
right there,
we
folks.
We got to have it.
Amen.
All right.
Thanks,
folks.
Thank you, folks.
Matt, you want to step in?
Good.
You're good? You don't want to let your face be known? I was really tactful. I managed to sit just outside of you. At least this one you can see
clever.
Me. Well, it was not necessarily intentional. It's the way it worked out.
There's Martin saying bye.
There's Martin. Hey, Martin saying bye.
Martin saying bye.
Yeah, Martin needed his day in the sun here. So.
That was a fast hour.
Thanks, guys. So we had